this conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silent, not praised.
Billions of people just living out their lives, oblivious.
Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without.
I drink your milkshake. I drink it up.
Thank you, John Larson. I receive your kind words on behalf of all of our courageous members of the House of Representatives who want the best for the American people. And what we can do that is best for them in the next 24 hours is to pass affordable, accessible health care for all Americans. The best for all Americans is to have 32 million more people to have health insurance in our country.
Poor.
The best for...
Piece of stinking filth.
Shh, standing in shop. This is AJ of the InfoWars. Listen to the Shaliak. This is Alex Jones of InfoWars. Listen to Shaliak on the Cold Reality News and Report.
This is the coolest thing I have ever seen.
Well, hello there!
All right. Welcome to Cold Reality Radio here on the UCY.TV Broadcasting Network. Sunday, July 17th. We are what I usually call halfway through the frying pan, the summer months. Not a big fan of the heat. It's just too oppressive, when we get into the high heat and humidity. Again, Sunday, July 17th, it is 10:02 a.m. on the East Coast of Nightmarica. And happy to have Clint Richardson here with me this morning, co-hosting. And we're going to be talking about a number of different things. That range from government criminal or criminality to inducement into contract to what the Roman Empire looked like before its fall and demise, and how it is quite similar to what we are seeing here, pre collapse. And, it's funny, Clint, I have conversations and I talk to a number of people, at different times, and sometimes they just outright say, oh, that's just crazy. You're off center. And then you run into some people that agree with you. But then they have a kind of a hard time. They don't want to, as part of the collective, they don't want to admit that they kind of agree. And so you communicate with them off the record, and they have some enlightening, and it's kind of like an actual like feel good thing where you're like, this person really kind of does understand. But as with a lot of society, people want to stay locked into a collective where it's the what David Icke calls the circle of I forget, I'm going to paraphrase, the circle of comfort, the area of least resistance, where because we've been controlled into believing certain things, the people inside that circle will tell you, hey, don't go out there. Don't say this. Don't say that. that don't, you know, don't act this way. You're going to, something bad's going to happen to you. People are going to think that, you know, you've lost your mind. People are going to think that you have, that you're either, you're going to get arrested. You're going to do this. You're going to do that, because they want to, you know, once this system is put in place, this mental prison, everybody, starts policing themselves so that, you know, you just, you know, you, it's just a self, it's like a self policing system where the large percentages of the population will police themselves. Clint, good morning. I'm glad to have you today.
Good morning. Yeah. You know, what you're talking about, actually, it's really ironic because, you know, as I'm going through and I'm really, really trying to understand what the Bible is actually telling us and what, you know, I always say, what does the Bible have to say about what you're talking about? And almost always it has the answer. It has the solution, amazingly. And it's not anything that the church will tell you. It's not anything, you know, it's not anything, it's not a religious answer in the respect of you know, it's just knowledge, right? It's just an understanding of things. And so what you're actually talking about is what the what the Bible calls sin, right? Now, sin in its in the common form that we know is a lot different than what the Bible actually refers to. Now, you go to sin and you see a sinner is one that has voluntarily, and it's always voluntary, because what you're talking about is basically a sense of cognitive dissonance where people know something's very, very wrong, but they participate in it anyway, right? Well, this is where my paycheck comes from. But I have to feed my family. There's all kinds of excuses that we make for not being, you know, under the correct law. For literally being, you know, I understand that anarchy is really what anarchy is to be against the natural law, by being under the legal law. So a sinner is one who voluntarily violates the divine law, or i.e. the natural law, right? The moral agent who has voluntarily disobeyed any divine precept or neglected any known duty. So to be under the natural law, which is what the Bible portrays as the story of Christ to follow, you must, it is your duty to treat others as you've treated yourself, to do all these things under that law. And, of course, the biggest part of that law, it turns out, is these two specific things, which are never respect persons, mm-hmm, and never respect flattering titles of any kind. That doesn't just mean I'm a doctor, I'm a lawyer. Yeah, well, that's a flattering title. And look what happens, you know, to people who trust doctors, who are actually participating in pharmacopoeia, which is defined as witchcraft or poisoning, right? They're not doctors when they're participating in pharmacopoeia. They're witch doctors is what they are. A doctor that sets a broken bone, that's a whole different. That's a real, you know, something that's valuable and healthy. But when you're talking about a pharmacopoeia dealer, a poisoner, an enchanter, well, that's a whole different thing. And so you're going to a doctor because he's got a flattering title given by a syndicalist organization in the university system that is very much there to teach us all about pharmacopoeia. And, of course, you got the pharmacopoeia agents, the salesmen, going and whining and dining these doctors and giving them all kinds of swag and T-shirts. And, you know, it's really disturbing when you see that these doctors are selling themselves to pharmacopoeia representatives. And then basically, when you go into a doctor's office, he puts in your symptoms and the computer program that's written by the pharmaceutical companies spits out which medicines, which of the pharmaceuticals, in other words, which of the witchcraft spells we should do. And so you find that the doctors are the number one cause of death in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Called iatrogenic medicine. All that stems from respecting the flattering title that was gained by the man that says, oh, I'm a doctor. right? That's what the Bible says, never respect. Now, a doctor, a healer, you know, that would be different. That would be someone that, based on reputation, based on your local area, you'd know what you'd want to go to. But these guys are not just doctors. They're also dealers in poisoning and in radiation and in things that have absolutely no benefit to society, to people. And trust me, we're all, I mean, I think everybody's been a victim. I've been a victim of so many bad things in hospitals. I think everybody can understand that trusting a doctor that you've never met before, that you know nothing about, just because some secretary assigns you that doctor, right? Some random healthcare company says, well, you're insured, you can go to this doctor, right? And they do that because they know that doctor will obey the mandatory limitations that are set upon that doctor because of the insurance. I mean, it's just one big, horrible commercial system, which is another thing the Bible says don't respect. All right, so we have a basic definition of sin, which is to voluntarily violate the divine or the moral law. Well, that's sorry, folks, whether you like it or not, all your little organizations, all your trivium, all your natural law, whatever you call it, it comes from the Bible. Whether you like it or not, sorry, it's the ancient knowledge passed on from generation to generation. I'm sorry. If that is so hard to accept for people, I don't know what to tell them. But when we really get down, now that's what the church tells us that sin is, and it stops there. It doesn't go any further, because if the church went any further, and it actually told you what sin actually is,
you would see that they're the sinners.
You'd see that you're in sin by being part of that church. Mm-hmm. You're in sin by being part of anything. So let's go and, like, okay, just to give you one example, the word sin is S-Y-N. S-Y-N. And it is used in the Bible for the word with, W-I-T-H. So when I'm with or beside or accompanying anything or how it's used in the Bible. So it's used about 123 times. Strong's Concordance G4862 says sin. And just to give you an example of a verse, it says, Now the man out of whom the devils were departed besought him that he might be with him. But Jesus sent him away, saying, return to thine own house and Shuha, etc., etc., etc. So there you have an example of how the word with is actually translated from the word sin. All right? Sin, the Latin. Sin, and then of course it's a different word when you go back to a different language. But it's the point is, what is sin compared to what the church will tell you what sin is? Sin is a neutral word because it just means to be with. So I can be in sin actually with Christ. I can follow Christ, and I can be with Christ, you know, in that way. So it's not necessarily good or evil. Those are terms of mankind, man's imaginations. Mary was in sin with Joseph in legal wedlock, right? They were also registered or taxed under Caesar's protection. You know, Caesar said all men should be taxed. So here's the real definition of sin, and I think of all things, this really answers your question, your initial statements about all these people out there who are knowingly ignoring the problems, knowingly pretending that their participation in whatever employments they're part of, you know, whether it's being a bank teller or a computer programmer or a sound designer or anything else that's contributing to this massive tome of fiction that we live our lives by, the money system, the entertainment system, you know, everything that's fiction. This is what sin is. So sin is defined by Strong's, basically, as a preposition denoting union, to be with or together with anything, to be an association, a companionship, a process, a resemblance, a possession, instrumentality, addition, which is a reference to your name. You know, you have your additional name or your surname.
Then it's connection with, like, synchronicity, like that type of thing.
Absolutely. Every word that begins with the word S-Y-N comes from the Latin, and it all has to do with being joined together or with something, and we'll cover a couple of those. Even the word synagogue is a word with sin in it, because it's a congregation, right? And it's a congregation, a church congregation that is with, and it the gog is like pedagogy, like it drives you, in other words. To be beside or to be with. Completeness is another concept. So again, you can be with Christ. So sin is not necessarily just always evil. It just means to be together. And so what the Bible says is sin is, again, your union. Well, that's that. Okay. That's, it even says to be constituted in here. Your instrumentality, your birth certificate, your addition, your name, your by association, you are doing things. Well, that means to be an employee, right? Thayer's Greek lexicon goes into more detail. It says, denotes an accompaniment or fellowship, whether of action or of belief or of condition and experience. So there again, that covers the church, that covers the nation, and that covers your employment. A fellowship far closer and more intimate than expressed by other terms, which the subject of an active verb is said to be or to do something. Now, how many times, Shelley, have we talked about this, man? My whole book revolves around the notion that every verb and every adjective, which are sort of real, you know, words, are turned into nouns. So, again, we have a name. Well, that's a noun. We have a title. That's a noun.
So, basically, what is self-evident is turned into a noun, something that is that kind of...
Exactly. Something that, if, you know, I'm a healer, you know, to heal is a verb, but to be a doctor is a flattering title, a noun, and it causes, you know, the whole population to be in a belief system that title means that you should trust that person. And, you know, looking at statistics, looking at iatrogenic death, which is death by a doctor, no person in their right mind would trust a doctor. I mean, that's just by looking at statistics and looking at the fact that all disease, in my opinion, is caused by the pharmaceutical industry, whether it's vaccines or other injectables or, you know, these horrible drugs. Like you said, you look at the statistics, under no circumstances should anybody be trusting a doctor. You should always be your own advocate when you go to a doctor and not trust a damn thing he says without saying, what do you know? And why are you prescribing me this? Do you know how it's going to affect me? Because I'm I can't think of the word. I'm P450 and a couple other deficient, so I can't metabolize drugs, so I'm going to have the worst kind of side effects. Did you test me for that? Because 15 to 20% of people who take these pharmaceutical drugs and have really, really adverse mental and horrible effects are doing that because they can't metabolize the drug. Did you test me for that? Why are you just openly prescribing something that you know nothing about? Why are you treating me like I'm the same as everyone else? What the hell is your problem there, doctor? Mm-hmm. And that's because I'm trusting the... if you say so, sir, I'm going to take this poison, this literally something that I can't metabolize because of my DNA makeup, my epigenome. Okay, that's great. And it kills me. I should be dead, by the way, because, you know, I was prescribed muscle relaxers that I have no capacity to... I've had a couple of bad experiences. One, was a friend, actually, who is in the nursing industry, and she gave me a Seroquel, which is an antipsychotic. I didn't know, to sleep. I was like, you know, do you have any sleeping things? Oh yeah, we give these to patients all the time. Yeah, I'm like, well, no wonder they're dying. No wonder you're killing old people by giving them an antipsychotic to sleep, right? So I had the worst side effects, and fortunately, I only took a little tiny piece of it, or I would have died. But I stopped breathing. I couldn't. My autonomic breathing response literally ceased, and I had to concentrate and actually think for about 10 hours. I had to breathe myself. I had to breathe in and breathe out. Like, it wasn't automatic anymore. So that's what my side effect was. That's listed as the worst possible side effect. I should be dead. But I stayed up all night and freaking survived it. So that's the kind of thing it's talking about is these respect of flattering titles, where we literally are killing ourselves by our trust, by our faith. We're having faith in fiction instead of in God or in nature, right?
Yeah.
So there again, which the subject of an active verb is said to be or to do something. So you're taking an action like, God, Jehovah is a verb. It's everything that's in being, right? It's all of nature. And you take that, and the church makes it into a noun, a name, God. And, you know, we pray to some being, something that we put a title on. And we have trust in the name. Meanwhile, we're shitting all over nature. It doesn't make sense. We're shitting all over God. We're polluting it. We're doing everything bad to it because we're not respecting it as in the verb sense. We're not respecting it as Jehovah. We're respecting it as a name that's offered by the church. You see? And because the church has men with flattering titles, priests, and politicians and all these different titles, we're respecting the name without ever requiring any, you know, religious test or anything else. I mean, it's ridiculous what we allow and what we trust, if you think about it.
In so many ways. I mean, what did we have? What doctor knows best, just all of these medical programs throughout the years. You've got, what was that? ER.
Oh man.
Scrubs. That's just a few to mention.
Nothing could have been more damaging to people's knowledge base than those types of shows. And I include in those the Law and Order
mm-hmm.
types of shows. My God, there is nothing to take away from Law and Order. I mean, Law and Order is so, and then there's Judge Judy and these amazingly, horribly misinforming shows about what law is. Never going to teach you anything about law, only about corruption. I mean, that's all those shows are about: corruption in the police, corruption in society, and how the two interact. Corruption in the system, and then you've got the hospital shows. Yeah, they're patently ridiculous. I know some nurse and doctor friends of mine love that Grey's Anatomy. And I've tried to watch it a couple times, and every time I watch it, it's like, oh, okay, so there's a terrorist attack at the hospital. Oh, okay, a plane just crashed into the hospital. Draw that much drama for a hospital? You know how boring hospitals are in reality? I mean, it's... You know, how do you justify this kind of fiction? It's ridiculous, especially when you're in the industry, right? But they love it. They absolutely love it. It's not accurate. It's not, they cringe at some of the things that they watch, but hey, whatever. So, sin. Again, this is sin. This is to be associated or accompanied with something by its title, by its name. To be one or with one or to accompany one, to associate with one, the attendance of one on a journey, either the companions of one, with the noun added. So what is that, again, referring to? It's one thing, Shali, for me and you to go out and do something. It's a whole other thing to be on a journey with a military, have the insignia of sergeant or soldier or general, and be that's when you're in sin, is when you have this added title and you're justifying your killing and raping and absolute debauchery to society and breaking of the natural law because you have a noun added, a name. Noun always just means name, person, place, or thing, right? Or to be with one's colleagues or fellow craftsmen, to be on one's side, to assist one, to joined to verbs of standing, sitting, going, etc., to be associated with and with verbs of living, dying, and believing. The recipient of some action, to be associated, I mean, it just goes on. Talks about rank, claimed for the church the same rank as the apostles, a more influential position, an accusative, the person or thing associated or added. So again, it's telling you that sin is the person or thing that you associate yourself to or add to your name. That is sin. A thing with its power or result of that which one has or carries with him. Obviously, we're carrying around our identification. We're carrying around our badges and IDs that say, hey, I'm a doctor, hey, I'm a lawyer, hey, I'm this, I am that. Hey, I'm a United States citizen. Hey, I'm in compact, I'm in union with this thing. And it just goes on. It talks about every form. But it also talks about being equipped with the power of our Lord Jesus Christ. That is also a sin, because you're associating yourself. You're following under the example of the law. You're trying to use that to live with Christ, to be united in spiritual bonds to Christ, and to lead a strong life by virtue of this union. See, that's what the church doesn't teach you that sin is, right? They only teach you the bad kind of sin. And because they're saying that, because they're saying to be, well, if you're involved in everything else but the church, it's bad. Well, no, actually being involved with the church is also, it's probably worse than all of those things because it's taking you away from true knowledge, taking you away from what sin actually is. I'm a member of the Catholic Church. Well, that means you're in sin. I'm sorry. That's not my opinion. That's the Bible. That's the whole concordance and lexicon of the word.
Yeah.
It's a voluntary association.
You've been pulled away from the natural. Like you said many times, if you're going to pray, you know, pray in a room by yourself.
Well, that's what the Bible tells you. That's not what Clint tells you. That's what the Bible tells you.
Right, exactly.
It's right there.
And and I think the struggle is, and I'm you know, I'm beginning to you know, really get a firm grasp of what you've been talking about, and you know, reading the straw man, is that. You know, when I'm sitting there and I'm listening to people now more than ever, I'm being able to decode exactly what, you know, people have been indoctrinated into. It's the money, what money buys, the homes. Before I would say, Christ, I'm never going to be able to afford this, or I'm never going to be able to afford that, or I'm not. You know, I just, all I do is just work on, you know, computers and technology. And now it's more apparent to me that, you know, that these things are not that important. If I'm sitting there and somebody's talking about, well, you know, her son, he's studying to be a doctor, and, you know, his daughter, she's going to be a lawyer. And then you sit there and you just say, you know, I don't even want to participate in this. Because it's, again, the flattering titles. It is part of a system that is just absolute, you know, sin. It's the, you know, it's like you say, you know, sin is being associated with some, you know, Associated to what? So no thing, as opposed to be associated, you know, with something. You know, and I've said that again this week when the time was appropriate. I said, you know, I said, hey, it's better to be no thing than something. You know? And then it was just like, what? What? And it was like,
but you can only pretend
right.
to be something. You aren't ever actually that thing. You are not a doctor. You have a certificate and a badge and other signs and symbols that say you are a doctor, but that doesn't make you a doctor. What makes you a healer is your actions, and what makes you a poisoner and a witch doctor is your actions, right? You gotta separate the verb, the actions, from the name, the title. And hey, let's face it, man. I mean, you ever thought about it this way? Doctors and nurses both are required to have like multiple million-dollar insurance policies for malpractice. So you're going to tell me that you're going to a doctor who has insurance that says, oh, darn it, you killed somebody. Oh, you maimed them for life. Oh, you poisoned somebody. Ah, don't worry. You're insured for that.
Right. And a lot of people just think it's frivolous lawsuits, you know. That's where they've been indoctrinated in a sense that if somebody's suing a doctor, then, you know, and it's becoming more prevalent now that, you know, people are being damaged by doctors. But still, the overall mindset, the collective mindset, is that doctors are prestige. They heal people more often than not. It's just like the whole vaccine premise that, you know, there's going to be some people that have a reaction, and then mostly people that are not. And what do they say? You know, it's justified what we're doing because, you know, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, that type of, you know, Star Trek mentality. Or I heard that phrase while watching Star Trek one day.
Well, that's your genesis of the, you know, that concept that one medicine fits all, when in fact that's completely the opposite of the way our bodies work. You know, a good example of that is blood types. You know, everybody should know their blood type. Everybody should be eating a diet according to their blood type. And everybody should realize, you know, with all this race mixing that's happening now, you got the white population, you know, we know what we mean by white, that white European, you know, all the French people, all the German people. Man, our population is dwindling so fast. It's amazing. You know, our birth rate is about 1.3 across the world, which means that we're going to be wiped out, virtually wiped out as any majority of any country in no time at all. We're already on our way here in America, of course. It's frightening when you see that white people make up 8% of the population of the entire world, and that figure is going down, you know, every 20 years at this point by some ridiculous amount, like a third or something, because the birth, not in actual life, but because the birth rate is so low that the future generations are going to dwindle so, so quick. That's amazing to me that we've been, and so that brings us back to blood types. Why was China full of Chinese people? Why was France full of French people? Why was England and Germany and all these countries full of people that had a specific look to them, a color, doesn't matter, whatever you want to consider, all these traits, right? It's their blood type, man. We think we did something really, really incredible by creating a drug that will actually prevent the blood type from actually doing its job. What are the blood type? What do the enzymes do? Man, when a negative blood person, human, comes into contact with a positive blood person, Rh factor. The negative blooded or the positive blooded people will actually treat that new life form, that baby,
right,
will treat it as a foreign infection and kill it. We literally had for centuries and centuries and centuries, eons, ages, we had a natural defense in our bodies that said you cannot mix races, you cannot mix certain types of blood types because we're not compatible, right? Along comes the pharmaceutical, the witchcraft, and that has nothing to do, by the way, with racism or anything else. That's the way nature works, right? Don't be fooled. Don't call it by some flattering title like racism. It's just the way the body works. If we weren't on drugs, we would literally, our bodies would be spitting out the life forms of anything that is not of our blood type. That's just the way the body works. And that, you know, not all blood types, but certain ones, negatives and positives, right? That is why you had these civilizations that were so white. It's not racism, it's race, period. It's this way, it's actually supposed to be. And so the fact that the pharmaceutical industry has come up with drugs that allow the bodies, that suppress the immune system so that we can have babies of a foreign race, literally something that's foreign inside of our body. I mean, it's literally changing our ability to, you know, just like a vaccine, to eradicate a disease that's happening within our body. When you have a child where his blood or her blood is not compatible to your own because it's a positive blood and you have a negative blood, your body's going to naturally cause havoc on that system, and that baby's not going to be able to genetically grow. It's impossible unless you suppress the immune system like they do today, and now we have a complete mishmash of cultures and societies, and we have all these new diseases, genetic diseases, and all these this crazy stuff, all to get rid of the natural law, the laws of nature, which say only certain people can have babies in this blood type, only certain people can be compatible in this blood type, and only certain people can be compatible in this blood type. You know, talk about a conspiracy. Talk about a really, really horrible way of trying to defeat the laws of nature. Wow. Holy crap. You know, I don't think people consider that for a moment because they're so indoctrinated with the racism and, oh, you're racist. What you just said is racist. What I just said is purely scientific, purely a natural effect of the body that has been altered in order to create a system where all these cultures are now being destroyed. Right, I'm sorry, but that's not racist. That's just talking about the natural law being overtaken by man's imaginations and designs. And trust me when I say that can only last so long. That type of tinkering with nature can only last so long before it's not possible anymore. The other aspect of sin is again what we've been talking about: to be personified and represented as a third subject, a third party. That's what we've been talking about. That's what agency is. It also means to live with Christ, to be united in spiritual bonds. It is of the union which arises from the addition or accession of one thing to another. It is to be in an association, a community, a fellowship, to be in participation with anything that is fiction, to be together, to be several persons or things united or all in one. Oh, gosh, that sounds like government, doesn't it? Several persons or things united or all in one. Gee, that sounds strangely patriotic, doesn't it? Completely. To be complete. To be with one's self in one's mind. Remember, we have a first person, our first self, our natural self, and we have our third person, our second person, that kind of thing, which is the artificial person. With oneself, it has to do with form, in composition, assimilation takes place chiefly in these words, which the preposition has lost more or less its original force and blends with the word to which it is prefixed into a single new idea. So I take Clint, I blend it with Richardson. The original force of Clint, which is my God-given name to where all unalienable natural rights are assigned, and I blend that with the word Richardson, which is a proprietary or a piece of property of the government. I attach that name, I prefix it, and now I have a single new idea, a person, a fictional person, a straw man named Clint Richardson. I took two different things, combined them, and made a new idea. In other words, I created something that is compounded or is a compound. And if you know anything about minerals, you know that trace minerals are always found like calcium or carbon or anything. But a compound is what we find when we find, say, chalk, which is calcium carbonate, a compound of two or more things, minerals. Right, so we're taking two different things, carbon and calcium. We're combining them into chalk, and chalk is what they give us as a vitamin, which our bodies can't utilize because it's not water soluble. We can either have carbon or we can have calcium, but we can't have chalk because calcium carbonate because it's not. It's not, you know, you put a piece of chalk in water, it's just going to sit there for years and years and never dissolve. Well, that's what we're putting into our bodies, thanks to companies like, you know, Centrum. And, you know, you read any vitamin bottle or any supplement bottle, it's always in compounds. It's never the trace minerals. That's why I like Dr. H. Ruat. Was the real pioneer in creating these water-soluble things that now Alex Jones and all these assholes are copying and not giving any credit to, taking their business and stuff. Where you put it under your tongue and it goes right into your body, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I it's amazing. Again, that is sin. Mm-hmm. Right? How many people know that? How many people have ever heard that? How many church members have ever been told that they're in sin by participating in a church? I guarantee you the church is not teaching this. The church is not teaching what's in the Bible. You go and you look at all the words that start with sin. Synthetic. Synthesis. Synthesize, right? Synagogue. To be together in an assembly is synagogue. And to drive. Synthesis is to put or set something in composition, to put two or more things together, right? You go down, you find synod, constitutions made in provincial or diocesan synods, right? That's where your constitution comes from. Sorry, it's a religious document, whether you like it or not. A syncope or a syncopist is one who contracts words. To synalchmatic contract is a bilateral contract in which the parties expressly enter into mutual engagements, binding themselves to each other. That's sin. Syncope is when two or more notes of one part, you know, it's always something that's contracted or put together or with. Synaxis is to congregate. Synodouche is where you substitute the genus for the species and the species for the genius, which is a lot to explain. Syntax is to be together, to put together, syntax. Synchronism is with and time. Right? It's a sin, believe it or not, man, it's a sin to be in God's timeless, priceless nature, and to be in synchronicity or synchronism with the Roman frickin' calendar. with time. You could also say with history. What is history but the events of persons, places, and things? It's not the events of men. It's not even the truth, right? And that's where that thing about Rome comes in and the statues, which we'll talk about. Synonym is to be with a name. We're all in synonym. A name, a noun, or other word having the same significance as another. You know, you just go down. Synopsis is to be with a view. It's amazing to realize what sin actually is, that it's not good or evil until it's actually applied to what's being happened. Then you've got the word syndicate, which is what I call the university system. And in fact, syndicate is a university committee, a combination or conspiracy of persons or firms united for the purposes of enterprises too large for individuals to undertake, creating a profit by creating scarcity, a false sense of scarcity, ordinarily of a financial character in which members are mutually interested. Special combinations is another word for that. So again, syndicate, to be with in a committee, or words to dictate. Amazing to me. This is everything right here. Mm-hmm. This is freaking everything.
Well, you know, when you've obviously set out on your path years ago, and it is this the information that continues on, which could be what Patrick says, the continuum, as you've broken. If you could say broken the code in your own, journey, you've broken the code. You're continually finding more information that attaches to the reality of, where sin, like your very last show, spoke about, you said archons. I think you and Patrick did the last show over at Corporation Nation over there, and you said, after all this time, I've stumbled upon this particular, archons and different things like that. So it just sounds like just a, the path. It's like, oh, what's that? Oh, the path, and you're just finding, more information that correlates with the truth, with the real truth.
I think it's not even just the accumulation of knowledge as much as it is having the faculty removing the barriers. Like you said, you're talking to people and they're having this cognitive dissonance. You're talking to people, they don't want to listen because, well, if I were to agree that, yeah, everything's wrong, that, I'm working in a job that supports evil or money or whatever, they can't do that because they're in sin with that thing. They rely on the money system for their very existence, for their job, for everything they do. It's their excuse for everything. I need money. I must spend money. I must, do money. Money, 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 money. That's the love of money. That's the root of all evil. It's obvious, And so to have faculty of mind is to remove all the barriers from what stop you from seeing. And that's, I keep telling people that I'm not any smarter than anybody else. All I did was search for a way to find the truth without ever having any flattering title or name or anything else that would stop me from understanding it. And so I have the faculty of mind. Faculty just means the power of the mind or the intellect, which enables it to receive information, to revive or modify your perceptions, right? Of remembering things in general, the power of the mind, the capacity of the mind to actually learn. Well, if your capacitators are all geared towards justifying your existence in some fictional name or title, well, there's no way you can have a faculty of mind. You're going to have cognitive dissonance. You're going to say, yes, what I do is okay. It's just normal. I'm part of the cyst. I'm it's okay that I'm in sin or in association and union and membership and all of these different things. It's okay that I'm right, because you don't have the faculty of mind to say no, it's not okay, because your very well-being depends on it. And so the only way I could ever understand this, Charlie, was to quit everything.
Yeah.
I had to quit everything. I had to quit money, pretty much. I mean, I obviously still have to buy food and stuff, but only the bare essentials. And when you get away from the money system, you see how everybody is controlled by it. It's not that we control money. Come on. We don't control money. It controls us. And it controls our faculty of mind. It controls our power of choice. It controls everything about us. That's why it is the root of all evil.
Yeah, it's and it's something that's so embedded.
Sure.
And so and we become so reliant on it that it is quite possibly, and not even quite possibly, it will be. It will be the end of us all.
Well, we exist as money, and that's what people don't understand. We are financial instrumentalities. Go look at your birth certificate. Go look in the corner. Mine says Midwest Banknote Company. That's who created my birth certificate paper. Go look at yours. It's in the small print in one of the outside borders of your certified birth certificate. It's going to tell you which banknote company your birth certificate is written on. Why is it from a banknote company? Because it's a frickin' financial instrument. Your exist, your person, your sin character exists as a monetary instrument. So of course you're going to be in the love of money. Of course you're going to be in sin, because the whole system is based around it. That's what I keep trying to tell people. We live in a system of sin. The legal system is diametrically opposed to the laws of nature. So it's crazy.
It's amazing how saying it's amazing is kind of off center there, but when it is set out, I mean, what would the world look like if it wasn't designed this way? I mean, that's kind of a hard, if we could design the world, back in the day, back, what would have, I mean, no matter who started the system or a system, would it in turn end up the same way as it is now?
I think so. So here's another thing that the church and the state have been responsible for, which is to personify evil into, characters. Mm-hmm. The notion that evil can be defeated. It cannot be defeated. Evil, in our perspective, remember, it's a verb. It's not a noun. Right, Hitler was not evil. Hitler is a surname. Right, Hitler is a fiction of history. Okay, evil is a concept of man, and so as long as man lives, evil from the tree of good and evil, the knowledge of concepts, in other words, that are not of nature, that are not bound by the natural law, these concepts of good and evil, that will always exist. The problem with forming a society, the problem with having an aristocracy, is that it always devolves, especially after the first generation of those noble kings. It's always going to devolve because the son is going to be born and have no concept of what it is to be under tyranny. So, of course, it's going to devolve, as Plato said, into timocracy and then in democracy. Democracy is the worst place you can be because it's the first. It's the last step before you reach the final stage, which is tyranny, according to Plato. And I concur. I wrote about this heavily. It's going to be in my second book. But, you're only going to have one generation that comes from tyranny. every other generation is going to say, well, hell, why am I doing this stuff that my parents, you know, why am I following the Bible? Why would I possibly go by these ridiculous laws that some ancient person set up when obviously nothing's wrong? Look around. It's America, man. We're free, dude. Yeah. What's wrong with, you know, denying the Christian faith when it's the very basis and foundation of all law? It's part of the common law. Why do I need any of this? And so you devolve the money. The aristocrats they stop being the priest class and they become the financial organizing class, right? Then they become basically tyrants after people learn through democracy that they can vote themselves into office, they can vote themselves to have money, they can vote profits and gains into the law, basically. That's when everything goes to hell. That's exactly where we are right now. Again, Plato's Five Regimes talks about this, which is part of the Republic. You got to understand, that's all based on being a part of this thing and not following the natural law. The only way that all of these systems, all this evil can exist, is to not follow the natural law, to respect other people's flattering titles, surnames, sureties, insurances, and all these different things. These are all sin. I can't stress that enough, that the only way you're ever going to ever get escape evil is to stop being a part of it. You can't call something evil when you're also acting in evil or in sin, something that is artificial, fictional. That's all evil really means, is something that's against nature. Well, of course, fiction is against nature, right? So, you know, the whole thing becomes very obvious at some point, but only to someone like me, who has no flattering titles, who has recognized what his surname is, who has recognized everything because I'm not a part of it. I'm not getting profits or gain from it. I'm not using it or considering myself attached to it anymore. And so I can actually look at things now. I can look at everybody's profession, quote unquote. Profession, what does that mean? I'm professing the good qualities of something. I'm its advocate or patron now. I'm its employee, so I have to defend it, right? I can't talk shit about that which is supporting me, right? Oh, no. Just like you wouldn't want to talk shit about Satan if you're in hell, right? It's so, like I said, so obvious, but in order to have this understanding, you have to go back to nature, which was my kind of goal, is to get back to the point where I have the faculty of mind, to get back to the point where I can see things for what they actually are without ever having to justify anything. And that's, I think, what you're running into, is that people have to justify their false existence in some flattering title, some employment, some church, some citizenship, right? That is where we're at. We've all got the ego that justifies the id, which again we said is the id entity or the identity, the false third person identity, the straw man. We have to constantly justify our existence as something we are not. That's amazing. You know, that is where true knowledge comes from. That's why the Bible tells you that true knowledge comes from the natural law. True knowledge comes from giving up everything that would cause you to not learn. And the only thing that's going to cause you to not learn is you defending your own actions as something that is actually against nature and against knowledge, right?
Right. And for the largest portions of life here, you know, that's never going to get through.
No. Get through. I mean, I think you have to recognize, and that's why I say evil is not something that goes away or comes. Evil is always in the minds of men. Why is that? Because men are always seeking ease. Men are always looking for the easy way to do things. And if that means enslaving beasts, enslaving men, if that means creating technology that's ultimately going to destroy us, robot workforce and all that shit, well, that's good, because it's ease. And ease, it turns out, is one of the deadly sins. To have things just brought to your table, you know, when you instead of actually having to grow and work and do, ease is actually one of the worst things you can be a part of. And let's face it, man, we're in the society of ease, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, if you were to ask someone, you know, younger people of teenage years. You can have this, you can have so much, you know, just, you can offer them, you know, a brochure of this is what you're going to get, but you can't take your phone with you. You can't take your iPhone and take your Android with, how many of those people would choose to keep the phone over the brochure of just absolute just decadence and things like that? I mean, you know, they could figure, you know, some smart people would take that and then say, I'll figure out a way to get my phone.
Yeah. And unfortunately, you know, I sort of have empathy now. I have a lot of empathy now for my grandparents and the generations before them, and even my parents, who tried to warn us, tried to tell us that we're doing wrong things, tried to tell us, you know, even when the first television came out, and that, you know, going from, my mom used to go to the bathroom in an outhouse in a farm in Nebraska. Right? You know, all this stuff that is making our life easier, supposedly, is actually doing the opposite. It's actually making our lives miserable because, you know, new diseases, new things that you can never even imagine, problems that are created that wouldn't even be imagined by them. That's what our parents were so frightened of, as they saw it. And now you and me, Shelley, we're watching as these new generations grow up. They're practically born with a freaking iPhone. They're born with Pokemon, whatever it is. I got these kids around my neighborhood right now that, you know, there was a couple kids sitting on the bench, and I always take my dog to the park. And my dog, he's so tall that he'll drink out of the drinking fountain. without any issue, you know.
I get a picture of that.
And usually kids, you know, they go crazy. They call him the cow dog because he's a Harlequin Great Dane, right? And kids go crazy. And these kids were on their iPhone playing Pokemon. What, I don't know what the hell it's called.
It's called Pokemon Go, and it is a. I'm trying to. From what how it was defined to me is, you know, it's a GPS setup system. There's these items that are in different areas, and they go to these areas to do battle with the. And honestly, until this week, I had no idea that the Mon in Pokemon was monster. I had absolutely no idea. So I'm talking to these people that are. That are in their, you know, mid to late 20s that I work with, and they were, you know, they were involved in the whole Pokemon. Now I remember Pokemon from my nephews, and they had cards and all this other stuff, you know, marketing.
It's so bizarre.
It is bizarre. And then they'll do battle with these and kill these are considered pocket monsters. And it's becoming this epidemic of people just, and some people are just, you know, they're getting, somehow they're getting lured into, and I made a joke about this, but it was, you know, on the local, you know, fake news, they said, oh, you know, this could be dangerous, you know, tune, and of course they do it right before a commercial so that you tune back in. And so people are going into wooded areas. They're going into at night, and they're getting their heads clubbed in. And I said that, and everybody started laughing, like, "Oh my God!" You said, and I'm like, "Yeah, people are getting they're getting, you know, they're getting attacked.
That's funny. Hey, there's a really good monster that but you got to go to the heart of Compton,
right? Wear red, not blue. Right, exactly. So, yeah. So that's kind of what's going on, and it's you know, you can the people will drive, and of course, what more a reason to distract people. They're driving and they're looking to see where these Pokemons are, and it's all through like GPS and.
So these kids, they just, you know, had no concept that I was even near them, which is very unusual. So I noticed, you know, and I heard them talking. Oh, there's a Skrizzle, or I don't know what the hell the names are. Yeah. Skrizzlebuckleabuck. I worked on a game, actually, and this is a very Japanese culture thing.
Big time.
I worked on a game called Monster Hunter, which is kind of similar, although probably a little more reasonable than Pokemon. But that whole Monster Hunter, you know, Pokemon thing. There's all kinds of cartoons and stuff that are, I mean, you know, the culture's really bizarre, let's face it, when it comes to their animation. But it was one of the most popular, you know, as I was working on it, it was like, okay, well, this will be a dud. Turns out to be one of the most sought after award winning games ever. This Monster Hunter game, and I'm like, what the hell? Seriously? And of course, that's because of the Japanese culture. Capcom, you know? Yeah. So I'm downtown yesterday, and same thing, but in this time it's an adult. All the adults are doing it. They're stopping in the middle of the street and going, oh, look, there's a Strapisaurus or whatever. Like, what the hell? Are you freaking kidding me? You're a grown man.
But it's like, I don't see what you're seeing.
So, yeah, dude, it's what the hell are we becoming? That's all I can ask. And I go back to the very obvious notion, Shali, that it's time to leave the cities. It's time for us to pick up and start a new thing. I've even got, you know, I've been thinking about it, man, and this probably sounds nuts to most people, but I'm like, you know, here's Putin from Russia coming out and saying, what the hell's wrong with you? You guys are trying to start World War III. What are you doing? Why are you being so idiotic? You know, he's actually calling us out for our ridiculousness at this point. And I'm like, you know, maybe it's time to leave the country. Maybe it's time to, maybe I should ask Putin if I can start a monastery that would be protected by his government. I mean, you've seen how large Russia is, right? The whole land of Russia.
Well, let's make no mistake, Russia has been romanced.
Sure, but I don't think they're quite as corrupted in any, you know, I don't think there's close to being as corrupted in the outskirts of the town. You know,
right.
I don't want to go to Moscow, but you've got all of Siberia and all that incredibly lush land that's three times or four times the size of the United States with less of a population.
Right.
It's like, why am I trying to look in the United States, which is completely corrupted, owned by landholders that I don't want to be a part of because they're disgusting to me? Right. You know, why am I not going over to some place that actually might respect the notion that I want to preserve humanity for what it is at this point without all the technology and actually might respect a monastery, a real monastery?
I want to believe that you know, Putin has... You know, you want to believe, and I think that's the whole thing in the whole, you know, the truther movement or something like that, where you hear something, right? You get so embedded in it, and that was years ago. Not so much for me anymore, as well. And you are so far removed from that particular aspect of where, you know, once we realize that there's a problem, you know, we look to Alex Jones for answers. We look to, you know, and then when we hear something positive, when we hear something, you know, that somebody's doing something or that something's going to be exposed or that, you know, there's a bill on the floor that's going to be talking about, you know, something that's going to make either the geoengineering stop or something like that. So we kind of get into that mindset where we're hoping that something good is going to happen, that something's going to turn something around. So we get addicted to that particular aspect of what's happening. And then a lot of people now are looking at Putin and they're seeing him, you know, at odds with Obama, him being at odds with, you know, with the system. But then I can't help but think, and that's just...
You also gotta think in a totally different way, man. Most people haven't been to China. Most people don't know what the actual culture is like in China. I've been there. My friend actually lives there and runs a hostel there. And he's like, you know, he tells me all the time, he's like, you know, who in the hell came up with the idea that America is more free than China? You got to come over here and see it to believe it. But, you know, it's ridiculous that we think we're free in this country. Then you go to Iran.
Yeah.
You go to Iran, you see a beautiful, beautiful culture.
I know.
Strict, absolutely strict. That's the idea of being a religious culture, is to not allow elements that are going to corrupt your whole structure into that society. Of course, it's strict. That's the idea. You want that. You want a religious test. I don't think people understand that. Oh, but in America, we have no religious test. That means there's no moral freaking test for anybody in government. Let me read you a quote, man. I couldn't believe it when I heard this. I absolutely couldn't believe that this guy was saying this on national television. I was truly, truly shocked to hear this on freaking television coming from a congressman, right?
Mm-hmm.
Shoot, what did I do with it? I gotta find it. Sorry.
It's one of those moments where you think that they're, you know, that every, and we know that pretty much everything is kind of, you know, lost, but then you see those little shimmers. You see those little bits of information. UCY Radio, UCY.TV, Cold Reality Radio here. Shali Lama here with Clint Richardson. We're just having an overall conversation about the fall of Western civilization and how we've been pretty much flim-flammed into believing that, you know, we're the freest place on the planet. When in fact, Clint's number of Clint's examples there, he knows people in different areas of the world, and they're like, yeah, you know, whatever America says about China is don't take all that in and believe that. And of course, America has to say that we are, this is the best place in the world, because America has been used as a, and is still being used today as a pirate cove, and looting the rest of the world through it. And Clint's looking for some information.
Right. So you look at this, you know, who's on whose side. Look at who we insist on being our ally: Israel, the worst of the worst of the bunch. Horrible, horrible politics, horrible, horrible things to say about Christians and everything. Horrible people. But that's our ally. They have to be our ally. Who's our ally? It's all the freaking evil countries out there.
Sure.
And then you've got China and Iran, which if you actually delve into their culture, they're trying to preserve cultures that are thousands of years old. The whole concept behind the democracy nations is to destroy culture, to absolutely destroy and intermix and breed a new society that has no concept of the ancient ways, of the ancient laws, of the natural law. Absolutely nothing. So yeah, you can demonize these countries for all kinds of things. You could say, well, look how they treat foreigners. That's how we should be treating foreigners. I mean, I'm sorry to say it. Now we have a culture of immigrants, of illegal immigrants, I would say, which, again, I don't really agree with the term, but you get the point. a bunch of people coming in from other countries that are not agreeing in any way, shape, or form to be part of the culture, but in fact, then a protest against our culture, mm-hmm. our set ways. That is what these countries are trying to prevent evil from entering into their their midst. And we're demonizing them for that. We're saying, oh, well, look at them. They're horrible. They have a religion as their foundation. They're horrible. Wow. We are so stupid. The one guy in France, man, his name is Vince Easterman. He's just a French street preacher, but he says, I've been an eyewitness to France becoming increasingly Islamicized. And he said the reason for that is that there is no longer an ability to morally resist a strong culture like Islam coming into our country. And what he's saying there is that France, the people of France, have been so corrupted in their concept of true culture and true that they have no moral law or moral backing, no religion, in other words, no religious tendencies to stop a religious culture like Islam coming into the country. And so if you're going to look at religion and why it's important to a nation, it's actually to stop other cultures that are based solely on religion from ever infiltrating your society. You have to have a religious sense in order to thwart all others.
Have a strong moral, you know, fabric that holds people to a proper behavior, proper behavior would be, but just to, you know, to try to do things the right way to understand. But yeah, we a lot of these countries, I mean, look at France. They've had they had two of these big terror attacks, the one at that the music, and then of course this Nice event, and something's going on in France that there must be a lot of pushback to what's going on. There must be a lot of good people in some sense that are still trying to hold this moral fabric together, because I mean they're hitting them hard, dude.
I remember when David Duke first started reporting heavily on the Prime Minister of France. What's so great about this is now you see the Jones machine really coming into its purpose, which is to promote the Islamic takeover of everything, right? The Islamic that's, you know, Jews don't run Hollywood, the Islam, Saudi Arabia, yeah. Right? It's always the same thing. And of course, the people at the top are always going to set the lower classes, the lower geniuses upon each other. That's how you control, is to always make us fight each other and never realize who the problem is. And so Jones is now he was probably begging for them to do what they're doing now, because he couldn't protect Israel for that long, right? He couldn't keep saying the things he was saying and anybody take him seriously any longer, until all of a sudden now they're starting to make everybody refugees, starting to bomb their country, make them refugees, and then force them to get identified, get a social security number, move them into different countries, right? Mix cultures that are completely incompatible with each other, right? Now Jones can say, see, I told you, it's the Islamification of America and all these different countries. Now it seems like Jones is telling the truth, when in fact, again, we got to go to the source. What's causing this? Who's controlling things? Right, it's always been that same agenda, where one group is pitting the other two groups against each other to cause war. It's what Albert Pike wrote about in Freemasonry. It's in the Protocols of Zion. So we can now blame and hate Islam, which is actually a peaceful, very peaceful religion. but one that's being turned violent and militarized by, of course, these Mossad and CIA agents, right? So, you know, it's so obvious what's happening, but, you know, now Jones has his platform. Now Jones doesn't have to make excuses anymore for supporting, you know, Israel. It really pisses me off. It's like I said, I mean, if you compare cultures, you can see which one is truly the evil culture, truly the culture of artifice, truly the culture of money and wealth and opulence compared to these other nations. You know, look at Iran, look at Russia, look at, I'm sorry, but there's no comparison. There's no comparison as to which one, if you knew anything about the actual culture and have actually been there, I've been to Moscow. If you've actually been there, you have a completely different perspective.
Yeah, I mean, we are taught a false narrative about the rest of the world. The information, the news, we see it. I mean, all you have to do is, you know, watch a little bit of RT, and you will see that nothing gets, you know, the information comes across the ocean and it goes through a bottleneck filter. And then we get, you know, we get just ridiculous, awful, awful brain numbing, just stupidity in the news. And then if you watch RT, they have a number of documentaries that they run. Like if you go to RT.com and just go into the programming, you'll see all these documentaries, and it will point out what you have been pointing out. But in the whole sand, you know, Sand Wars was not on there, but they point out things that are happening that are similar to that, like you know, a United States corporation. You know, going over to another country and building factories over there, creating toxic environments for the people. You know, they get jobs and they get to work, but they also, when they come out of there at the end of the day, they've been exposed to something, or they've been exposed to the environment.
And then we blame that Chinese company when in all the time it was an American company, American-funded company.
Right. In fact, and then you just look at a lot of the news, and then even on RT, they will give you news that's out of Israel. They will give you both sides of it, and in no way do they ever paint Israel as being like we do here. Oh, they have the right to defend themselves. They got the right to do this. They got the right, you know. So there is here incredible bias, incredible deflection of what's actually going on over there. And then at least with RT, you get more of what's real. And as I said before, I want to believe that there's somebody out there that's going to, you know, do something or start doing things the right way, as like what you were saying with Putin. I can't help but think, you know, with the money and the power and the control that is obviously in place, how is Russia now? How are they immune from that? Or is it, do they go back and have they understood what happened with the, you know, the Bolsheviks and all that other stuff, where they were just absolutely
decimated? Because Putin is kind of famous, actually, for, I have it in one of my blog posts, for actually collecting all of the, you know, the Bolshevik army, Lenin, Trotsky, and Zinoviev, and all those generals we know were Jews, and he actually collected a lot of the Jewish books, propaganda, and ancient texts and stuff, and actually sort of had a public ceremony where he gave those back to the Zionist leaders of the world and said, "Never again. Never again are we going to let you people infiltrate our society and cause the havoc and kill millions and millions and millions of people, in the Holodomor and in the revolution, as they called,
where all these dead
white farmers were killed. The real Holocaust is what it really boils down to.
And to this day, Trotsky is seen as a revolutionary, like he was, so important, so integral in what happened back then. You can see how fucked up, that we can see how far away from reality that is.
Well, the other aspect that I don't think people know this about Lenin. Lenin was very, very intricate in his propaganda. He came up with that whole color scheme of red and orange and yellow, I think it was. All those Russian propaganda posters and everything that encouraged people to join the military and wipe out the bourgeoisie. And, Lenin was a very, very important figure in advertising, in propaganda. And I think people need to actually study that. And learn a little bit about the power that came from just Lenin's creativity when it came to making people support his views and stuff. It's pretty amazing, actually. There's a great movie. It was on Netflix. I don't know. It's one of my favorite movies. It's actually a Russian movie. It's mostly English, but. It's about a guy who's an advertising agent, and he starts, I don't even know how to explain it, but he starts seeing the power of advertising, and he starts actually seeing like anthropomorphized creatures that would actually draw people in like to the local hamburger place or draw people in to certain brand products. And he realizes that, it's no longer people's wants or desires that are driving the brands, but it's the brands that are driving people's desires and wants, right? Famous kind of quote from that movie. Wonderful, wonderful movie. It's called Branded.
Branded, right. Yeah, I typed in Russian movie advertising agent or something like that, and it came up pretty quick.
Yeah, Branded, and it was on Netflix. I highly recommend that movie. It goes into some of Lenin's, some of Lenin's techniques and stuff in advertising, and you see that the advertising agent, which is again the epitome of evil, has a lot of respect for Lenin's techniques, even though they led to pure evil. And, genocide, you still got to respect them. And if you're an advertising agent, you're going to respect the most powerful, you're going to use the most powerful tools available to you, even if those tools were used to cause death and destruction, right? I mean, they work.
Yeah, as long as they turn a profit.
And that's the difference between following the natural law and following the legal law. As long as you're not using, you justify everything you do, and you associate yourself with the title, and the title allows you to do things that otherwise you shouldn't do. And that's what the Bible tells you to stay away from. And that's our whole culture is based on that notion of of flattering titles.
We're Christian. We're a Christian nation, bro.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. And like, I said this on Deanna's show. I was like, yeah, we are a Christian nation. Christian is a flattering title created by Caesar, assigned to pagans and heathens. And that's exactly what we are. We're Christians. We're fucking Roman Christians. It reminds me, man, let's go. I wanted to read this this thing on Rome because this kind of blew me away. It's like I already knew it down deep. How shallow the Roman culture was, and that we are almost a mirror image. That's been commented on by a lot of people, that we are Rome before the fall, right?
Yeah.
This is from the Department of Greek and Roman Art at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. It's the Roman copies of Greek statues in Hellbrun Timeline of Art History, New York, the Metropolitan Museum of Art. It's back in 2000 when this was written. It's just three little paragraphs. But this really gives you an idea of what the real issue in Rome was. What was the real problem? Rome was very much like America in that it sort of built itself on other people's cultures. It had symbols, empty names, and empty titles based on other cultures that it sought to be like. And if you think about it, that's exactly what America is. We have all these statuaries and symbols and architectures from all their different cultures, but we, you know, when you look at our own architecture, it's this bland, institutional, horrible, you know, shit that has no culture to it at all. And this really explains that, I think, why we are so like Rome and the culture in Rome, which again was pagan heathen, but called themselves Christians. In the late 4th century BC, the Romans initiated a policy of expansion that in the 300 years made them the masters of the Mediterranean world. Impressed by the wealth, culture, and beauty of the Greek cities, victorious generals returned to Rome with booty that included, in other words, they stole, included works of, that booty is a pirate term, by the way, that included works of art in all media. Soon, educated and wealthy Romans desired works of art that evoked Greek culture. To meet this demand, Greek and Roman artists created marble and bronze copies of the famous Greek statues. Molds were taken from the original sculptures and were used to make plaster casts that could be shipped to workshops anywhere in the Roman Empire, where they were then replicated in marble or bronze. Artists used hollow plaster casts to produce bronze replicas. Solid plaster casts with numerous points of measurement were used for marble copies. Since copies in marble lack the tensile strength of bronze, they required struts or supports, which were often carved in the form of tree trunks, figures, or other kinds of images. Although many Roman sculptures are purely Roman in their conceptions, others are carefully measured, exact copies of Greek statues or variants of Greek prototypes adapted to the taste of the Roman patron. Now, a patron is someone who is in sin or supports or is an advocate for Rome. Some Roman sculptures are a pastiche of more than one Greek original, a copy of one or more old statues, simulacra, in other words. Others combine the image of a Greek god or athlete with a Roman portrait head. So think about putting someone like George Bush on the body of the Hulk. You know, that's kind of what they're talking about, worshiping something that just didn't exist, giving these people who are lawmakers and stuff the bodies of gods, right? That's kind of what they're talking about. The meaning of the original Greek statue often lent beauty, importance, or heroic quality to the person portrayed. By the 2nd century AD, the demand for copies of Greek statues was enormous. Besides their domestic popularity amongst the common people, the numerous public monuments, theaters, and public baths throughout the Roman Empire were decorated with niches filled with marble and bronze statuary. Since most ancient bronze statues have been lost or were melted down to reuse the valuable metal, because let's face it, these things were pretty much worthless. They were just copies. They were molds, right? Something you could buy at Kmart, for God's sake. Mm-hmm. Roman copies in marble and bronze often provide our primary visual evidence of masterpieces by famous Greek sculptors. All the marble statues in the central area of the Mary and Michael Jaharis Gallery at the Metropolitan Museum are copies made during the Roman period. Let me say that again. When you go to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, you are seeing copies of statues, not the real thing, not the real freaking thing, made during the Roman period, dating from the 1st century BC through the 3rd century AD. They replicate statues made by Greek artists some 500 years earlier during the 5th and 4th centuries BC. Not straight from the Department of Roman Art, Greek Art, from the Metropolitan Museum of Art. They're telling you everything you see is fake, man. You go to the Natural History Museum, you see all those dinosaurs, all of them are fake. They don't put real dinosaur bones out there, and if there are real dinosaur bones, I've yet to see them, because they don't show them to you. You always are looking at a statue, a fake. Let's take another example. Let's go to Stonehenge. There's a video online showing them rebuilding Stonehenge. Not even rebuilding. They designed Stonehenge into what it is today. You go to Stonehenge, you think you're having a spiritual experience. Oh, I'm on a ley line. I'm doing this. You look at these pictures, you see that they laid cement foundations and put these stones where they thought they should be. Right. And what I'm trying to tell you, man, is most of history is fake. It's all fake. It's all designed to get you to think, you know, something that's not true. And so compare this history of the Roman statues, which, you know, everybody thinks are masterpieces and are, and it turns out they're just cheap plastic or, molds, plaster molds, right? That's all they are, really. And that these people in Rome were so shallow, they had no culture of their own, so they had to adopt other cultures. They used these symbols of wealth to pretend that they too were wealthy, and they got so caught up in the simulacra, the copy without an original, they got so caught up in their own little matrix of artificialness that they burned. They lost everything and that's exactly where we are today, man. We worship the symbols, the representations. We're in sin. And therefore, we're going to die. Our culture is going to die, what little culture we actually have. You know, we are just like Rome. We go to our local, you know, grocery store or whatever. We buy gnomes. We buy whatever statues. We buy pillars. We you know, amazing when you think about it. And so you got to start wondering how much of the architecture is actually just molds.
Right.
All those pillars that look exactly the same, that great detail, how much of that was just molds? Right? I mean, it's all fake. That's why you're not supposed to worship artificial things. You're not supposed to be a part of these cities and these municipals, you know, corporations. You're not supposed to do that. Yeah. And yet that's exactly where we are.
Yeah, it is cyclical and sick at the same time.
To me, it's, you know, it's become more like a case study. It's like watching the end and just recording it for what it is, you know.
Yeah, just the that along with the destruction of the environment, which is also being blamed, obviously being blamed on.
Well, the point I think, going back to what you were saying earlier, is that evil is always going to be there. Evil is a verb. It's an act. It's the actions of men. Evil does not exist in some form that the church teaches you. There's no devil. There's no, you know, the word devil means evil genius, and it's talking about man. There's no Satan. Satan means what is adversarial to nature, and that can only be man. Man is the only one with the capacity to create imagery and things that are opposed to nature. Man, only man can do that. And so the only way to protect yourself and your society, whatever you build, from evil is to have your religion be exactly what Christianity, what the Bible is, which is the worship of nature above all else, the worship of quote-unquote creation, the worship of life itself, and the laws of nature as they stand without man's interference. That is what true Christianity is. Not what the church teaches, not what the church has created, but what the Bible actually teaches is the worship of nature as your God above all else, above all titles, above all names, and above all laws that you might create. And the only way you're ever going to escape evil is to not participate in it, because it's always going to be there. Men are always going to seek ease. Men are always going to seek a way to create a system that enslaves other men, species, nature itself. that is the lesson to learn. And it's not an easy lesson. It's not something that most people are going to grasp onto, because most people are going to grasp onto ease, evil. And the Bible tells you that. It says, look, the path is narrow. The path is very narrow, because a wealthy man can't enter into the kingdom of heaven, right? Kingdom of heaven is nature.
Right. And that, you know, kind of, you know, when people look at this, at the system, and they see that, you know, of course, with the, with people believing that, you know, Jesus is going to return someday. It's, you know, even I throughout, you know, my, my journey here would think, all right, well, somewhere along the line, this guy, Jesus is going to come back and he's really gonna, you know, put these people in their place, you know, but you know, if
Jesus's own words were, I'm here to save you, not to judge you. He's not here to pass judgment on you. That's God. See, that's the problem, man. You worship Jesus as God. A lot of people do. They say Jesus is God. It's nothing in the Bible that says Jesus is God. That's from the church. And in order to make man into God, then the Pope can be Christ, and the King of England can be Christ, right? The Bible says there's a lot of Christ, and it says you should be Christ-like. There's a lot of Antichrist as well, right? So to worship. See, this is the problem, man. Everybody has a savior. Everybody has their returning God. What's the most popular returning God today? Unfortunately, it's not Jesus. It's Nibiru. It's the fucking aliens. The fucking aliens, the Galactic Federation is our savior. They're going to come and they're going to save us. Right? Everybody has their God. Everybody has their savior, the returning God. Some people, it's the Zodiac. The water bearer, right, is next, right? We're in the returning God of Pisces, and now the next one is the water bearer, Aquarius. He's the next returning God of the Zodiac. They're all returning. Pisces will return in another 20,000 years or whatever. Everybody has their returning God, but people don't want to admit that all of it is religion, including the return of Christ as an anthropomorphized human character. Christ will only return as a consciousness in men. When men start acting Christ-like, acting according to the laws of nature, that is when Christ returns. All right? So you can go and you can focus on your aliens, on your returning planets. Man, if those things are true, you're probably going to be dead anyway. It's not going to help you. Right? These things are not saviors. They're creations of men. Period. All right. The only thing that's going to save you is if you start acting like you're supposed to act. Take responsibility. Realize that you people out there are the problem. Oh, well, just like we have all these gods, we also have all our demons, our devils. Let's blame the Rockefellers. Rockefellers are evil. They're the problem. No, they're not the problem. They're a thief. They're pirates. That's all they are. Don't get mad at a pirate for doing what a pirate does. Realize that, hey, maybe the problem is that you're using their money. You're using their valuation of gold. They fix the price every day, and you respect it. Who's the problem? Is it you? Because you're the one using what they are giving. You're voluntarily saying that gold is worth what they say it is in the London fixing every day in the city of London, the Rothschild Bank there, where the United States has an office. And meet every day to decide what the fixed price of gold is going to be. Look it up, the London fixing, right? You're the problem, not them. You are using and participating and in union with them because you are using their money. You are using their credit from their banks. And you know what? My worst complaint, my biggest pet peeve are pensioners, because pensioners, especially government pensioners, allow their money to be invested in Rothschild banks and all the different companies and the Carlyle Group. You'd be amazed at how much the California pension fund and all these other public pension funds of government all these people out there who complain about welfare when welfare is not even close to the amount of taxpayer money that goes into public pension funds, right? They're complaining about that. Meanwhile, what is a pension fund but welfare for the middle class? That's all being propped up by taxpayer money, not by your money. You are allowing your retirement money to be invested in the worst fucking corporations in the world, not just United States corporations. And then you complain, oh, well, so much money by the United States is going over to these foreign corporations. That's your money, supposedly. It's not your money. It's a pension fund, so it's government money. They've tricked you into putting it in there. You're the one that is propping up all this horrible shit, all this globalism. That's coming from the pension funds. That's your doing, not that you are volunteering to put your money in the pension system. We have no right to blame the pirates when we are signing up to be on their frickin' ships. So it's time to start taking responsibility, start looking for things as they really are, and to leave her, leave the money system, leave everything that is bringing you down. Stop blaming the pirates and start acting like you're supposed to act. That's all the Bible tells you, man. That's all religion really is. But you have these corporations that are built up on money and mammon and all the crap that creates a really, really horrible corporation called a church. And that's where you're putting your faith. You're putting your faith, as the dollar says, in God we trust. Well, if you have in God we trust on money, well, then that God is most certainly mammon.
Indeed. So, and this whole thing that was going on with the BRICS, and they were talking about, you know, a new currency or something like that. What did you follow that? Did you? I mean, because obviously something is pulling away from the dollar. Something's pulling away from the main money system, the petrodollar, things like that. That will assuredly level the American corporation at that time, unless they've got, obviously, they have other plans. But what was the BRICS? Does that have any possibility of replacing this and making it a more equal level playing ground or no?
You had the shill Ron Paul, who I've exposed in every way possible. People don't want to listen. You had Ron Paul and people like Ron Paul always promoting their, Austrian economics or whatever, always promoting gold and always promoting the notion of having a commodity backed currency. Right. And so when you're looking at what they're shooting for, we have to stop and realize that any object, whether it exists or does not exist, can be money. A chicken can be money. Oil can be money, right? And when we're talking about money, what we're really talking about is mammon, to value something in something that doesn't actually exist. To put a value on anything is mammon, right? It's the opposite of charity. It's the opposite of love. It's the opposite of the respect of nature and its laws. It's to put an artificial value on something and compare it to something else. That's the basis of aristocratic societies, to put a value on a man based on his nobility, his blood, his title, and compare it to the commonality. That's what spawned the Bolshevik Revolution. That's what spawns world wars, is the valuation of the elite or the aristocracy, the nobility, as being more valuable than the slave class, right? That's all money. That all has to do with money. It's nothing else, right? So when you're talking about BRICS, you're talking about cashless society, you're talking about Bitcoin, whatever it is that floats your boat and you think is better than the current system, it's all the same thing. It's money. Money is fucking evil. There's no getting around it. When you put a value on something, it's freaking evil. It's not charity. Charity is the cure for all of this. It's the opposite of charity. It's the opposite of love. It's the opposite of peace. Right? So no matter what system you're looking at, the whole idea is to get you to put a value on something that doesn't actually exist, to value one thing more than the other. So if you're going to ask me the intricacies of bricks and the intricacies of these things, I'm tired of talking about it. It's fucking evil. That's the only intricacy you need to know. It's the root of evil, because it's the root of valuation, of mammon, of putting a false title, which includes value, onto something that is based on nothing. That is the ultimate sin. That is valuing something as, you know, trading your labor for money is accepting something that is worthless for your own property. The IRS even defines your labor as your own property. That's why it can't actually tax you unless you're stupid enough to file tax returns. Right? I mean, I'm telling you, man, I refuse to get into debates with people about money anymore, because once you realize what money is, what it stands for, what it signifies, and that it is truly the root of all evil, how can you debate on its finer points? How can you try to justify it anymore when it's the very thing that is causing every single problem we have? They're going for a cashless society. They're going for a system where everybody makes the same wage. Everybody does this. Everybody. And, you know, ultimately, that would be the same thing as a true equity in nature, except in their system, there's always going to be that top elite. There's always going to be the landholders, the controllers. And then everybody else down here in their money system, I mean, so that's what we have to understand, it's not our money. In their money system, we're all going to be controlled as slaves through the money. We are only going to be able to do things and participate in commerce depending on our money situation, right? We can't grow food, we can't do anything, it's all got to be regulated. And the fact that you're going to have a cashless society where there's no anonymity whatsoever means that you're not going to be able to do shit out here. Everything's going to be tagged, tracked. If you trade something illegally, it's going to be known. If you speed on the highway, your GPS now tells you what the speed limit is on every road. That they're not even going to need to patrol the roads anymore. They're going to know you're speeding just by your GPS.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, money is more than just money. Money is a complete and total system of control, because everything becomes valued in money instead of their actual nature.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't think any one of them are going to move into a system of charity anytime soon.
Well, remember, charity, every word has a dualistic meaning. So charity in the legal sense is not charity at all. It's the name of a corporation. It's not the verb charity. It's the noun, the name charity.
Right.
Just like Christian is a noun, a name, it doesn't mean anything.
So, what was it? And you mentioned that the second book, and I wanted to also get Clint's information out there for the strawmanstory.info. Again, strawmanstory.info. Go over there. You can download his book for free, and also if you'd like to make a donation there, you can. The information is on that page for that. Clint's trying to get his book, get his document, his straw man information into book form, so it can be proliferated out there, so that it can never be deleted digitally. that's the donations would go.
Well, you know what's ironic about that, man, is, and I'm going to write a blog about this because, you know, there's no way for someone like me to get ahead in any way, shape, or form. Whether it's from making movies or writing, or I was thinking about this the other day, and all the conferences that people hold. I held a conference here in worst place to hold a conference is Utah because it's the Beehive State. Everybody's part of the Mormon horde, trying to bring all these guests, you know, that I'd hear on the InfoWars and those kind of things, and had a really, really good conference, and no one showed up. I paid for it out of my own pocket, went into debt trying to put on a frickin' conference that nobody could attend, no radio station would support it. That's the kind of shit that I'm used to. That's the kind of stuff that I'm used to, putting my own... And I know a lot of people who've tried to throw conferences can attest to the same thing. You know, these speakers want speaker fees and all this shit. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. You know, you try to do good things. You try to, and ultimately, you end up paying it for yourself. Here I am. I'm sitting, you know, I've collected 3,800 or so in donations, and I'm very, very grateful to people who've donated. But the people who've donated have been like... giving me one lady's, you know, I'm very grateful. She sent me $800 in the mail. One sent 100, another sent 200. What I'm not getting are people who've read my blog for years and can't, you know, if the 1,800 people that are subscribed to it just gave $10, I'd be there. I could print the book. I could keep it private. But as it stands, I'm going to have to do the same damn thing I've always done, which is to go into debt myself just to be able to print the book to keep it, to get it out of the frickin' ether of digital, you know, erasure. I'm going to have to do it again. I'm going to borrow money just so I can get this thing into print. And you know what? I'm tired of this. I feel like Tesla must have felt, right? I feel like anyone who'd ever done anything good, whose ideas were stolen or not respected or what, that's how I feel right now. I'm so sick and fucking tired of trying to do the right thing, and whether it's some jerk out there trying to sell some remedy, some guru information, or whatever it is, man, we don't support each other. It's no wonder we're all stuck in this fucking slave colony. We don't support each other. And I'm sorry, I'm not going to mince words anymore. I'm not going to pretend like everything's okay. No one support. I mean, these people, 60-something people supported me, and I'm so grateful and so thankful. Where's everybody else? What the fuck are we going to do if all of our money is being funneled into the fucking InfoWars sites? Right. I'm sorry, I don't mean to cuss. You know, cussing is a low... I'm just so tired of trying to do things for people and not getting... anything in return. I don't know what to say, man. I'm just about through. I'm just about done is what I'm saying. Why am I doing this anyway? Why am I putting myself in a place where I'm just going to die a very unhappy, unsatisfied man? What's the point of me doing this if I can't get the support of people for doing so much research and so much time that I've put into this stuff, and this is all I can get is just a few people that step up who realize the importance. I don't know what to do, man. I'm stuck. I've tried to do the right thing. I've tried to stick to my morals. I've kept it private. I will not publish it. I'm doing the right thing, and doing the right thing in this society is illegal. It's wrong. It's not upheld. We don't support it. I just don't know what to do, man. I'm frustrated all to hell. I'm depressed. Like, I don't know what to do. And you know, that's from the heart, man. Sorry, I don't mean to. It's okay.
With me, the judge. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out today. And remember, read the information and, do what you think is best as far as only one holistic system of systems. I will MK Ultra.
20 rounds a minute, try to stop them. Don't put that on your wish list, that's retarded babble. Protesters make you hit list soon as they start to rabble. They are nothing but fishes in the barrel. It doesn't have to be Christmas for a carol. Some decorate with ornamental decorum. Some perform shock and awe on Hanukkah and Purim. That's where my job come in. I am a blessing to the mercenary. For the corporation selling weapons to them. Any potential competitor stepping to them. I'm authorized to knock them out and stick a GPS into them. They want to sell uranium to Iran. That's enriched, that's a bitch. Now we gotta teach a lesson to them.